All right, you'll notice that there's this whole story about the pet food company or whatever it is. That's totally made up, of course. It's a lie. I'm just going to tell you the truth that this is trying to be built around, the story's built around. I want to tell you actually what's happening so that you understand it. What we're doing today as a goal is trying to assess enzyme activity. In other words, assess how well an enzyme is doing its job. Well, you already know that the job of an enzyme is to speed up a reaction. So you'll know whether an enzyme is working if the reaction that it catalyzes is happening, right? And the faster that reaction happens, the better the enzyme is working in those conditions. That's basically what we're doing today, but with a specific sort of enzyme. Now, the enzyme that we're using today is called lactase. You can tell that's an enzyme, right? A-S-E ending. This is one of those enzymes that's named for its normal substrate. Its normal substrate is lactose. Similarly, in the upstairs, we looked at a slide with sucrase as an enzyme that splits apart sucrose, right? Same thing here, only with a different sugar. Lactase is an enzyme that can break apart lactose. What kind of sugar is lactose in terms of size? It is not a monosaccharide. It's a disaccharide. And why is it called lactose? What does that mean? What does lact mean?
Milk?
Exactly. Lactation is milk production. Lactose means milk sugar. So there's lactose in milk. Milk is more than just lactose, but there's lactose in it. But it's a disaccharide just like sucrose is, except the two monosaccharides that are hooked together to make lactose are different from the ones that are hooked together to make sucrose. All right. Lactose is made up of glucose as one monosaccharide and galactose as the other. So when you hook those two together, glucose and galactose, you make lactose via what kind of bond? Glycosidic linkage, exactly. All right, now lactase, the enzyme, has lactose naturally as a substrate. That's why it's called lactase. And the specific reaction that lactase catalyzes is the hydrolysis, or the splitting apart, of lactose, the sugar. Which means if lactase does its job, then lactose, the substrate, reactant, gets turned into glucose and galactose, the products. Well, if you need to assess how well an enzyme is doing its job, there's two ways you could go about this. You could see how well it works by measuring how much reactant or substrate disappears in a given amount of time, right? Because if this thing's doing its job, lactose is disappearing because it's getting broken into the products. So you can measure disappearance of substrate. That would be one way. Or you could also measure the appearance or the accumulation of product. And in this case, you have two products. So you could either measure the accumulation of glucose or the accumulation of galactose. You see that? There's three different ways you could go about this assessment. But then we run into a problem. We need to be able to detect one of these three things in order to see how much disappears or appears. This brings us to a method that we're using today that we haven't used before, which is called spectrophotometry. The metry ending tells you that it's a measurement technique. The device, which you have in your plastic box here, is called a spectrophotometer. And you can go ahead and open your box and look at the little black spectrophotometer. They're much smaller nowadays than they used to be. They used to be big benchtop models. And by the way, you won't be able to use this without a computer, so when it comes time to using it today, you'll get your computers out of the chest up there. Just make sure when you put your computer back that it's not just closed. It has to be all the way shut down and plugged in to not overheat and also to charge for the other classes. Make sure you remember that. Anyway, the spectrophotometer, you're not opening up the device, but I'll just kind of tell you what's inside it. At one end, you have a lamp that is emitting white light. Now, colors are not actually a feature of the light. Color is an event in our brain. It's a sensation. But it's easier to just say that light has a color. Well, different light has different color based on its wavelength. Light is electromagnetic energy, and so it has wave properties. And the wavelength is the distance between two corresponding parts, from crest to crest, or trough to trough, or anywhere to the next part. So this wave, for instance, has a shorter wavelength than the one above it. And we sense in our brains different wavelengths of light with different color sensations. White light is a mixture of a bunch of waves, so it's all the colors mixed. All right. You don't see it unless you open it, but there would be right after the lamp, there would be a prism. And when you send white light, which is a combination of all the wavelengths, all the colors, into a prism, the different wavelength light gets bent at different angles depending on that color. And so you have, the cover of Dark Side of the Moon. It's going to refract into the rainbow of colors from the other side. All right? The reason that's important is because on the other end of the instrument, you have a well. It's the square hole in your black instrument. And that's a square hole because it fits special tubes that are back here in this styrofoam box, and their corresponding lids. But don't touch these with your bare hands. When I'm done talking, put gloves on. If you touch, it's not because they're going to hurt you, it's because you can put oils on the surface and it's going to affect your results. So touch them only with gloves. But anyway, those special tubes are called cuvettes. And each of your samples, once you get to the point of measuring them, you have to transfer your sample from an Eppendorf that they're in into a cuvette. All right? So the well is just a place to put the cuvette. But when you do that, the liquid that's in the cuvette gets exposed to light that's coming through here. And you really need to pay attention to just one color of light, which is why in the old instruments where you actually turned a knob to adjust the wavelength, what you're doing is turning this prism so that only light of the right color would go straight ahead. All the other ones would be off to the side and not used. It's important to set the instrument up, though, with a particular color of light, because a spectrophotometer works based on absorption of photons. Now, light, I just told you, has wave-like properties. That's why you can depict it as a wave. But light also has particle-like properties. So you can talk about it as little particles, not like material particles that have mass, like electrons and protons, but little packets of energy. called photons. And a beam of light is just quadrillions and quadrillions of individual photons. All right? Well, when a photon encounters a particle, there's a few possibilities. One is that the photon can just be transmitted, meaning it's going to go right through that material, whatever it is, like light coming through a window. Another possibility is that it will be reflected, bounced off in some other direction. And the third possibility is that the photon could be absorbed by that material. And when a photon gets absorbed, it no longer exists. The energy that it was carrying is now in the thing that got did the absorbing. Spectrophotometry as a technique is an indirect way to quantify or measure concentration. All right? Concentration, when you think about it, is defined different ways, but for molarity that we're used to, it's moles of solute per liter of solution, right? Directly measuring that would mean you'd get in there and count almost infinite numbers of particles, right? You're not going to directly do that. Spectrophotometry lets you indirectly do that as long as the kind of solute that you're using, which depends on the experiment, is something that is able to absorb photons. We call things that are able to absorb photons pigments. Because by absorbing photons, that makes them look a certain color to us. Anyway, a pigment can absorb photons. Alright, now a spectrophotometer is useless if the solute that you're trying to measure the concentration of doesn't absorb any photons. But at the far end of this, after the well, there's a screen in there, a collecting screen, that is sensitive to photons. And if any photons make it all the way through the sample and hit the screen, then the computerized part of the instrument will figure out how much of a signal that is, how many photons are striking it. Right? This is why you have to set up the instrument to have just the right kind of light that gets absorbed by the thing you're trying to detect. Because the greater the amount of that solute that is present in your sample, the less and less light will make it all the way through. We call that quantity the absorbance. How much light got absorbed by the sample is the absorbance. And that's what, those are the numbers that you're going to be writing down when you use the instrument, absorbance values. Okay, so think back to the goal. If we want to know how well lactase is working, we could measure the disappearance of lactose, because its concentration should go down, or the appearance of glucose or appearance of galactose, those concentrations should go up. If the enzyme is working, right? The problem is that all three of these things are invisible to the spectrophotometer. None of them absorb photons in the visible range that the instrument uses. So we can't use a spectrophotometer to do this if we use the normal substrate of this enzyme we're trying to rate. That's why we're not using it, because we can't. But even though enzymes are specific, like we've been talking about upstairs, that means only the right kind of shape fits in, right? Only the right kind of substrate. That doesn't mean there is necessarily only one kind of particle that can fit in. Sometimes multiple substrates exist, and they're similar to each other, which is why they can either one fit into the enzyme and act as a substrate. This is why we can do this experiment, because we can't use lactose. None of these three is visible. Instead, we use a surrogate or replacement substrate, That's what ONPG is that you've been using already. ONPG, in case you're interested, stands for ortho-nitrophenyl beta-D galactopyranoside. But that's why we call it ONPG. It's a hell of a lot easier to say. That's what it stands for, though. And despite the long name, it's similar to lactose itself, which is the normal substrate for the enzyme. Just like lactose is built of two pieces hooked together, so is ONPG. ONPG has as one of those parts glucose, just like lactose does. Oh, I'm sorry. Galactose, just like lactose does. That's the galactopyranoside part of the word, ONPG. The other part, though, is called O-nitrophenol. Or ortho-nitrophenol, but it's O is for short. Okay, now ONPG, just like lactose, doesn't absorb photons. So once again, even with this other substrate, we can't get at enzyme activity by measuring disappearance of substrate because we can't detect substrate. And I've already told you you can't detect galactose, so that one's out as well. O-nitrophenol, on the other hand, is detectable because it does absorb photons in the visible range. And that's why to us, if it's in solution, it makes the solution look yellow. That's not urine over there in that bottle. That yellowness is from O-nitrophenol. Okay? And by the way, we can make, just with our naked eyes, a qualitative assessment today just by describing how yellow it got, if at all. Right? That's just a qualitative assessment. You can tell that one is yellower than another, so you could compare them, but it's qualitative because you're not putting a number to it. A quantitative assessment puts an actual number to that value, and that's what the spectrophotometer can do. It's a lot more sensitive than your eyes. Okay? Well, a spectrophotometer needs to be set up. First of all, like I said, you have to be working with something that's detectable, and O-nitrophenol is. But the measurement, the output, the numbers that you get from a spectrophotometer are never absolute measurements. Absolute means that they stand on their own. They're not based on anything. Instead, the measurements that a spectrophotometer produces are always relative, meaning that that number is compared to something else. And that something else is what you use to zero or calibrate the instrument. You have to set that up beforehand before you can get your measurements, because your measurements are related to your zero value. So you have a particular special kind of solution that is called a blank, and depending on which of the two experiments you're doing, you use different tubes for your blanks. But a blank has everything in it that your solutions you're trying to measure have in them, except no solute. No solute of interest. In this case, it wouldn't have any O-nitrophenol. Everything else, all the other ingredients are the same, though. The reason this makes sense is that you put that blank, as it's called, in a cuvette, into the instrument, and the light goes through it. Well, not 100% of the light is going to make it through, even though there's no solute in there. Some of it's going to be scattered away. Some of it might be absorbed by the glass, whatever. But some light will get through, right? Since there's no solute you're interested in, though, however much light does get through, you're saying to the instrument, call that 100% of the light is getting through, and therefore zero is being absorbed. That's what you're doing when you're zeroing the instrument. You're giving it a baseline to compare your real measurements with. Then when you take that zero out and you put a sample in that has some amount of O-nitrophenol in it, less light will make it through, and how much less is what the instrument figures out is due to absorbance of solute you're interested in. Does that all make sense? You sure? Is it not? If, you know, the blank has everything in your mix except O-nitrophenol, and your samples will have everything the blank has plus some O-nitrophenol, and therefore however much light got through the blank, there will be less light that makes it through your sample because some of that light will be absorbed by the O-nitrophenol that you're looking for. And that what you're measuring with the spectrophotometer is just how much less light came through, which is the same as how much light actually got absorbed by the solute particles, which is how it can put a number. The output that you see as a number on the screen is an indication of an indirect indication of the concentration. And you can then do a little math with which the you do according to the instructions in the manual to turn that number that's directly output by the instrument into an absorbent, I mean into a concentration value. Actually, the math you do turns it eventually into an activity level of the enzyme. So the yellower the tubes get to your naked eye, the better the enzyme worked in that condition. And therefore, when you put it in the spectrophotometer, the yellower it is, the higher the absorbance value will be, and therefore the higher the activity level of the enzyme that you compute from that will be. What you're looking for in either experiment is which of the conditions, which one of the three temps or which level of lactose is the best condition for that enzyme to work at because it has the highest activity. Okay, does that make better sense? Okay. Then it's really just a matter of wrapping it up once I get done talking. Like I said, put gloves on. When you set these spectrophotometers up, which, by the way, one half of your pair can be retrieving the samples. The other half can be setting up the spectrophotometer to save some time. But anyway, when you set up the spectrophotometers with the computers, explicitly follow the instructions on the little laminated cards that are in the box that the spectrophotometer's in. And you sign in, by the way, just with your normal MEID. So that should hopefully give you no problems. It will say collect. You'll have a collect button, which you could use to, you'll be using it to get values, but you're not saving anything to disk. So just use the collect button so you see the numbers. You're writing the numbers down for each sample. And when it asks you to save, you're not saving anything. Just when you're, as long as you have them written down on paper, you're done. The only thing I didn't tell you, though, is that these cuvettes, which are square tubes, obviously those will fit four different ways into a square well on the instrument, right? But you can put them in wrong because they're not symmetrical. There's a little triangular mark on one face of each tube that you'll see once you get handling them. And make sure that is, you put the tube in so that that matches up with a little mark on the instrument. If you put it in 90 degrees turned, the light is going to travel through a different amount of liquid, and therefore it will give you the wrong answer. So you have to make sure they're in the right orientation. Other than that, I think I can leave you at it. Glove up before you do anything.